Welcome back, Michael. Let's talk about some of the four particular outcomes which may occur that you write about in the future. What are some of them?
Exactly. Well, I mean, there could be more than four, but the ones that I've been looking at, if the first one is the most alarming, of course, because if, in fact, the progeny, the descendants of the Nephilim do find a way out through the Stargate, then, you know, I personally think, given their deeds so far in the last 30,000 years, that these people have never loved our planet. They've never really wanted to be here. They don't like us. And they have no love for their veritable prison. After all, the Earth has been a prison to them. What might they do by way of their sophisticated technology, their microwave technology and what have you? And, you know, as we know, criminals normally don't like to leave, you know, fingerprints. So the first outcome is if they do, in fact, find a way out of the Stargate, they have not done that up until now. And they do give us updates a lot through the through the movies and the films. There's incredible stuff being shown right now. That's just, would, you know, we could do a whole show just talking about what they're showing on television right now in the way of symbolic updates. You know, that's a very, very alarming concept. The second one is that they have contingents within their own group. That's how I came up with these four, is because they have different contingents, different lieutenants working on each of these four just in case.
Okay, and in these four outcomes that you're giving us, you developed them, you found them?
There's synthesis. Okay. There's synthesis of what I think that has been happening just by, again, symbolically looking at what they're feeding us over the media and in different kinds of books and other ways. The second one is the fact that they realize once and for all that they cannot leave, that this barrier, even though it is part technology, part etheric energy, up until now, you see, they've thought that whatever technology could put up, technology could take down, and they've basically subjugated the whole of the Earth. A lot of the concepts of empire that you keep hearing people talk about in the history books about empire and what empire is all about, and they do accept that empire is about the resources of other countries. Well, yes, but why would a little country like England in the 1500s start stretching its tentacles out to the whole of the world to subjugate Africa, to subjugate America, to subjugate India? You see, they needed the resources. They needed the resources to move technology forward to the point where they could be doing all of this. Now, if they realize finally that it's not going to work, no matter what they do technologically, they can't find the key, and all the Paul Allens and all the Bill Gates and all the other people that they put onto this plan, they're just not able to come up with it. You know, the Russians behind the Cold War during the time of the, you know, the wall, and the Russians were busy working at this day and night, and they have not found a way through. Then the second outcome is that they start just coming out into the open and ruling with unmitigated tyranny. They're almost doing that now, as a matter of fact. But this would be a real sort of, you know, free jack, Judge Dredd type of situation in which there's no point hiding anymore. There's no point, you know, nobody in the research community will be talking about hidden masters and hidden persuaders and the secret government, because they're all going to be out in the open, you know, basically the way I saw it in the streets of Belfast. You know, not
It won't be a secret anymore.
It won't be a secret. They'll operate pretty much in the open, and with that will come the loss of all the privileges, because realizing that now they just need to be emperors of the world, you know, better to reign in hell than serve in heaven kind of concept, then what's the point of us all having jobs? I mean, right now they're pulling up their ladder of the middle class right now as we speak. You know, we're pretty much in the final stages of something right now as we speak. The next countdown to the next 10 years to the Mayan end date of 2012 looks pretty bleak from where a lot of people are standing, you know, and that's coming from an optimist. But the point is that, you know, there's going to be a lot of changes very rapidly. In the next 10 years, it's going to seem like 100 years is encapsulated in just a single year. So, and if these individuals decide that it's just not working and they can't get out of here, they will rule this planet with unmitigated tyranny that even Hollywood, with all its guile, could not show, could not demonstrate to us. It'll be something really horrific to see.
Well, let's go back. How does this all equate with these fallen angels? How do they tie into this?
Because, George, the people that are behind the thrones of government and religion are the descendants of these individuals. And this is part of my research, just like it was with Eustace Mullins, Jordan Maxwell, is to expose these individuals. And we have, all of us, Jordan has also realized that the machinations, the governments and the political systems that exist are not recent phenomena. There's an occult history of the world. There's an occult history of Ireland. There's an occult history of Africa. There's an occult history of America. There's an occult history of the world. And we see it in the modern milieu, right? What we see, sort of the machinations of politics. But these things have their roots in the ancient past. That's why the royal family, for instance, the royals of the world, and even some of your presidents I'm seeing with alarm, walk on the red carpet. That red carpet, by the way, is symbolism. It's symbolism for the bloodline connection. You know, 34 American presidents are absolutely directly bloodline connected to the royal dynasties of England. That means the Habsburgs, the Hanoverans, the Black Venetians. We have a direct connection. You know, the Venetians previously were the Phoenicians. The Phoenicians are the high Semites coming out of Babylon and Sumeria. There's a tremendous connection. I have a new book coming out called The Origins of the Illuminati and the New World Order, going into something I couldn't cover in the Atlantis book, which is another fascinating tie-in with Egypt and how the secret societies, how Egypt plays into all of this, and how why the Illuminati and the Freemasons use some of these Egyptian symbolism that you see all over America and on the American $1 bill. And all over the American milieu, you keep seeing Egyptian symbolism.
All right, let's save that for another show, Michael.
Yeah, we definitely have to do that on another show.
That is, we're going to run out of time if we have to get into that right now.
That's right.
As well. Okay, so let's review just a little bit before we move forward here with these fallen angels then. Because you've got to bring in religion in one respect. Was there a misinterpretation of all the religions on this planet based on these fallen angels? Because so many of them are so biblical-minded that they think that this was a godlike situation.
Yeah.
Obviously,
yeah,
it was not, based on your work and research and some of the other people.
No, but you see, like they said, if an engine works well, it works like magic. Well, imagine the people who create those machines. Imagine the abilities of these people to the humble... the ancient people that I'm talking about are not the people, our ancestors are not the ancestors we're taught about in school. They're not the primitive Neanderthals and all of that. That's a total rubbish. And that's luckily, and I'm happy to see that that is being refuted now by great scholars like Michael Cremo and Richard Milton and so on. But you see, as advanced in their own way, our ancestors, how much more advanced were these visitors, you know, basically coming in spacecrafts, flying all through the planet? All the tumult in the heavens, the war of the gods, was actually perceived by our ancestors. So these individuals were taken for the gods.
What happened to all their technology?
Right, this is
spacecraft. Where'd it go?
That is the central question, and it's also the question that distinguishes my work from everybody else's work in this. What you've asked goes to the nub of why there's a difference between my work and, say, Zachariah Sitchin or any of the other researchers in this field. This is because... Remember I was saying to you earlier that the Homo Atlantis, the first creation of the Atlanteans, they decided to move and set up their own civilization on Lemuria?
Yes.
Well, after these servants had left, the Atlanteans had nothing, they could not do anything but go back to the drawing boards to create a second progeny, a Mark II type of being, a Mark II slave to serve them. This being we know today as the Adamic human being, that the Bible refers to as Adamic. That word comes from somewhere and it means something. This was a dumbed-down version, you know, of the first version. And after the Lemurians realized what their masters had done, meaning that the Lemurians on Lemuria knew that their masters had gone back to the drawing board to create another dumbed-down animal,
okay,
a humanoid that would serve them, the Lemurians interfered. They sent agents back into Atlantis to talk to the Adams and to the Eves to seduce them away to Lemuria, saying, you know, you don't have to be servants here. We were servants once, and we saved ourselves, and we're here, your cousins. We're your genetic cousins. Why don't you come with us, you know, and you can be free from all of this. And this exodus precipitated the War of the Gods, which happened about 13,500 years ago. The Atlanteans, finding out that they had been snubbed, that their slaves had been seduced away, unleashed a war. Basically, the ancient mythologies are clear about this. They initiated a global nuclear war on the Lemurians, who responded in kind. Now, the ferocity of this war was so intense that it basically irradiated the moisture in the atmosphere of the Earth, and it caused untold cataclysm far in excess of the first flood. And one of the things that War of the Gods caused was the pole shift. So to answer your question, we're cutting a lot in short here, of course,
sure,
because we're on radio and we have a short period of time. The fact of the matter is that the global war that took place between these contingents, which is recorded in every single mythology of the world, bar none, precipitated violence on Earth. And the Earth responded by a polar shift. Now, this does not necessarily mean that the poles shifted over, you know, 180 degrees or anything like that. Even the smallest movement of the polar axis would just cause untold devastation on the planet, which it is known to have done. And that is why the continents of Atlantis and Appalachia and Tyrrhenia and Beringia and so many others sank beneath the waves, and that is the answer to your question. That's where their technology went. The gods, again, did not know this was going to happen. They did not know that their violence would cause Earth to respond in violence. And, of course, the continents are in upheaval, and a great mass, almost all of their technology, not all of it, but most of it, of their technology was destroyed in that. So here we have these super advanced technological beings left stranded and pretty much naked themselves. And this is why there's been a delay, in fact. Why do you think that this, what we're talking about, after all, happened, what, 11, 13,000 years ago? How come we're still talking about it? How come that the conclusion, you know, wasn't done in the past times? It's because there was a variable that prevented the conclusion of this particular drama. That conclusion, that variable was the polar shift of the Earth, which prevented these individuals from doing what they wanted because their technology was removed. And ever since, they've been literally manipulating the flow of history, pushing mankind forward in the most brutal and sadistic manner so that they can rebuild the technology somewhat, you know, same as what they had before. And you know something? They're very, very, very close to that.
They may be. Now, are you saying, though, that the old technology is lying on the bottom of the sea?
Yep. Of course it is, and they dig it up all the time. And then, as Michael Cremo's books will show you, and many other scholars have shown this, then they put it before you as some sort of, you know, artifact and bury it away, you know, in some Indiana Jones-type way and just lie through their teeth about it. But Richard Hoagland has exposed this. Michael Cremo has exposed this. Graham Hancock has exposed this. And there's many people in previous centuries who have also written on this. Of course that technology exists. It's absolutely a fact. But they did, you know, it's like your old Western gunfighters here. If the gun is taken away from the gunfighter, he feels naked, right? Well, think how naked you feel when you have the technology that these beings had. So they were desperate, and they were literally stranded here. They had a few pieces here and there of their technology, enough to do some primitive genetic experiments with it, and that's where the reptilian concept comes in. For people who are fascinated by that and haven't had that properly explained to them, and thinking reptilians come from outer space, that is not true. The reptilians were another group, because remember, these people had the Adamic race and the Lemurians not serve them and move away, so they still wanted servants later on after the pole shift. When a semblance of normality came back to the planet, they went back to the drawing boards, but they didn't have as much technology in the later age after these devastations, and therefore they crossed their DNA with certain animal life forms.
Oh my, so they turned him into a reptile.
Right, and that's where you get the Minotaur and the Centaur and the Unicorn and the dragon beings, and that is where you get the reptilians. They're the Mark III being, and they had no human DNA at all. These had alien DNA, which is humanoid, and they had animal DNA.
Okay, what happened to them? Where's that species?
As
now?
Many of your guests have definitely talked about it, and John Rhodes is an authority on this, they still exist. Remember, like in any child that is born, you can have a very reptilian-looking child, and you can have almost a pure human-looking child, but it's reptilian.
So also these reports, let's say, of Mothman or Chupacabras or
that's
things.
That's where it's all coming from.
And Bigfoot. Do you think that's what these are, these creatures?
Undoubtedly, every single phenomenon like that is part of this genetic. It's a throwback, or it's part of the genetics that was and is a Hollow Earth concept. In the book, I go into the Hollow Earth and how that ties into this particular event. And by the way, a lot of the births today, like the Siamese twins and the freaks and all the things that exist in the backwards of mental institutions, as some of your listeners probably know about this, a lot of this, which is again put before us in some sort of, you know, sad, tragico-comedic way. By the way, why were the Nazis so fascinated with that and so fascinated with, racial throwbacks and all of that kind of thing? Because a lot of the mishaps of the past, we find them again today in the bizarre births that occasionally people have. There's a whole sub-study of that as well. But yes, you're right, and mythology is filled with the hybrid beings, Celtic mythology most of all. That's how I actually got onto this, is because through the Celtic mythology, they leave you no doubt that such hybrid beings did exist.
Was there any pure Nephilim blood left even today, or is it all gone now?
This is a this is the key point that brings us right up to date. You couldn't have asked a better question, because that brings us right to the modern age. A couple of years ago, when I first started working on this book, George, my answer would have been no. But now my answer is, in fact, yes. It turns out that now, of course, the original pure-blooded alien beings live for a very long time, but of course they do die. Some estimates say that they live about 700 years.
Okay.
However, there is another aspect to this, which is going to be pretty, you know, pretty scary in a way. In order to bypass death through a very elaborate process that involves genetics and other scientific processes, some of these beings, just before they die, can be put into a suspended animated state. I have now discovered that some of these original beings, I don't know how many of them, but it ties in with other research I've done involving geomancy and archaeoastronomy, are actually buried on the Earth, and they're in a state of what you might call suspended animation, for want of a better term.
From 30 to 50,000 years ago?
Yes. And I know some of the spots where these beings are, because I've made it a life study. It is not a pleasant study, by the way. I don't do this because I have nothing better to do. It's just one of the things that you have to study when you look into these things. And some of these beings are buried in a rock. And that is the reason, the real reason, because it has nothing. If anyone who's out there who's still in the sound of my voice thinks that the reason why the vanguard of the West is over there because of some sort of terrorist threat, or because there's oil and money to be had, are in La-La Land. Because the people that we are talking about who control the world have been billionaires from the first centuries A.D. Granted, some of their lower henchmen at the bottom of the pyramid might be turned on by all that power, money, and oil, but believe me, that is not what makes the world go round. There's other occult reasons, much infinitely more sinister, which ties into why all the museums over there were ransacked and robbed, and why sacred artifacts were taken away, and why what those sacred artifacts would be being used for. It ties into the dates of why the war was initiated in those times, and why in Afghanistan, because there's things buried underneath Iran, Iraq, and Afghanistan that these individuals want to move in some sort of X-Files type way and resuscitate. Well, you can't do that if Saddam Hussein and his gang is looking over your shoulder, can you, if the country is sovereign? So what do? You obliterate those countries so that you can go in there and work unmolested to raise the dead, to raise these undead. Because we have something coming here, which I refer to as the Antichrist. I know what the Antichrist really is. And these pure-blooded Nephilim, and the reason why they're raising them, by the way, is because they haven't found the key to get out of the Stargate. So in a final solution-type scenario, they're thinking, if we could raise our original masters, they don't want to do it. But they're forced to do it, because time is short. There's a countdown that the Maya were talking about, a countdown to the 2012, where these individuals are not going to have the luxury to rule the world as tyrannously as they've been doing, because some other spiritual force is coming in to take care of business. So these people are on the move in order to try and vacate this planet as fast as they can. And one of the ways that they've decided to do that is to now go to the places where these underground cavernous graves are, and to open them and resuscitate these individuals through a genetic process that involves the DNA.
What do you think the Nephilim, if we were able to find them, those that are in this suspended state, what do you think they look like?
Pretty much they're taller than us. They're meant to, according to many legends, including the Celtic, they're meant to be actually quite handsome. There's reports of great ugliness, but there's also reports of incredible beauty. This is where the whole idea of Lucifer, the son of the morning, the most handsome of the angels, comes from. Celtic mythology backs that up. The head of the demonic race in Ireland's mythology was the most beautiful of all men. In fact, in Gaelic, when you speak of the word beautiful, you actually use the word for the fallen angel.
Oh, well, stay with us then. Back in a moment. I'd say, okay, let's take Michael and put him in a room and lock him up and throw away the key. Mm-mm, not anymore. A lot of things he says makes a lot of sense. A lot of sense indeed. So we'll be back with him. I'm going to take some fast blast questions for the rest of this half hour. And the next hour, we'll open up the phone lines, give you an opportunity to chat with him. By the way, thank you so much again for the continuing support of children through Children International. It just continues to grow as we creep toward our goal of 500 children. So those of you who can afford the $18 a month, which is just 60 cents a day to sponsor a child, please do so. There are a couple ways to do it. There is a toll-free number, 1-800-869-9863, 1-800-869-9863, or you can go to the coasttocoastam.com website. On the left-hand side, click the yellow flashing banner, and that'll take you right to the website, and you can sponsor a child that way, too. You'll be very, very happy when you do that. Believe me, it just changes you somewhat. And let's just continue doing. If, you know, we can get 20 to 40 people a night to continue to sponsor, we'll hit our goal, we'll go way over it, and everybody will be happy. Back in a moment. Michael, I've got to ask you this. With these fallen angels, does that include Lucifer? I mean, was he among this group?
Yeah, the original prototype of that concept is none other than the leader of the Nephilim who came here, who decided that when the mating with the female, Earth females, didn't work, that turned out to be something, you know, worse than Rosemary's Baby, so they decided to genetically interfere. It was his idea. That being's idea, and you know, I hope that the beings that we're talking about that are interred under the earth, you know, that's not the one. But you know, either way, even if it's another one of these beings that were interred in the earth. Now, Celtic mythology, British mythology, anyone who's really done their homework with Welsh mythology knows that, you know, they talk about Cronus being chained for 1,000 years. In the Book of Revelation, you hear about the bottomless pit, and that the angels of darkness are bound for a time. That, you know, and I think it's Revelation that talks about those who were not, who are not, but who will again. I have a DVD coming out that's a companion to the Atlantis book in a very short time, within a couple of weeks. In fact, I have 6 DVDs coming out, and one of them is a companion to the Atlantis book that goes a lot more detail into this concept of the interred ones and the fallen angels. And you're absolutely right. There's no doubt about it that that prototypical concept of the, you know, a bona fide Luciferian principle has some antiquity in history, yeah.
So what about archangels? We've heard, you know, Michael the Archangel, Gabriel. Who might they have been?
These are, again, you know, I believe that there's the concepts of the angels is a physical thing. Like Jordan Maxwell, I'm totally convinced that when people talk about angels, they were speaking about physical types of individuals, and the great scholar L.A. Waddell in the previous century did a lot of work on the archangels to discover that, again, these were heroes originally, individuals caught up in the great battles of the gods that later, you know, were, I mean, these beings were literally so great, literally the men and the women who fought on the battlefields with physical swords, and that later on there were their names, or the corruptions of their names, entered into the religious canon and into mythology as some of the angels, you know.
You know, Michael, I've always believed that this happened on this planet and it was going on within the universe.
Yeah.
And here comes the question that a lot of people are going to be asking later on, I'm sure. So let's see if we can get an answer from you on this one as well. There's no question that regardless of what these are, these beings, these fallen angels, what have you, that it doesn't really take away from the belief system of a creator. If anything, it might enhance it. However, all the stories that we read, a lot of the Bible, the Quran, everything talks and makes reference to a creator, to a God. Do you think this helps it or it minimizes a God when we talk about fallen angels as extraterrestrials?
That's a great concept. I have you know, a whole other, literally, you know, a library of information to answer that. But what I tried to do in the Atlantis book was to steer away from the obviously metaphysical. I am a metaphysician. I work in the divination arts, and I come from a long line of people who were philosophers, and I have my own personal answers to that. Because I felt that what I was trying to communicate through the book was so absolutely of practical importance to people that they imminently must know what's going on in order to make sense of the world, sure, around them, of the political milieu, that in order, and I've had discussions with some of your other guests on this and other people who email me from all around the world asking those questions about the nature of evil and how the Nephilim even became evil themselves and what this means for, you know, religion and spiritual teachings. you know, I would love to discuss that, but again, I put the emphasis on the factuality of it because it's very easy to get, you know, lost into the abstract here. That's what, in fact, in one way, that's what we've done too much of. We've got so lost into the abstractia and into the sort of the metaphysical conundrums, which are fascinating as they may be, but that has also served, George, to blind us to the actual, you know, the scripture, right, to the actual factuality of a lot of the stuff that's been happening there, that is written in the book of Genesis, that's written in the Deuteronomy, that's written in the book of Job. You know, yes, there are poetic, there's philosophical, there's metaphysical meaning to be drawn from that, and people are specialists in that, and I love that subject, and I've studied it my whole life. And I have a lot to say about it. But I have had a great job as an editor of my own work in order to decide, you know, shall we go on this sort of tangent here, you know what I mean? Or shall I keep it topical in this instance because this is the most important thing to realize, a very standard story.
All right, but you're not dodging the question now, are you?
No. I mean, you know, that. I am dodging it in a way because I take those kinds of questions so damn seriously.
Sure.
About religion and God.
But do you believe in a creator then, based on the things you've learned about fallen angels?
I definitely do believe in a higher intelligence, absolutely.
Okay.
No doubt about it.
I also believe
that we are going to have that intelligence very much operating in our life from 2007 onwards. We are now living in the times where anyone who maybe would say no to that question, like we meet many people in the world who have decided that there is no higher intelligence in the world, well, those guys are going to be in for one hell of a shock because in the next 10 years, in fact, from the Maya countdown, it was 13 years countdown to 2012, so that brings it back to 1996, right? Because from 1996 to 2012, you got 13 years. Well, we're halfway past that already. And in my astrological calculations, which are about America but also about the world, anyone who's out there who thinks there is no higher intelligence is going to be in for a mighty big shock because that intelligence is going to be directly involved in Earth affairs very, very soon, and in a way that is perhaps not expected by a lot of people.
The giants, were the fallen angels giants, Michael? How big do you think they might have been?
That's something I go into in the book and also in the DVD. It's amazing. Some people estimate that some of these people were about 18 feet tall, and I'm not joking there. There was thigh bones alone have been found that were 8 feet tall. Just the thigh bones.
God.
I've got all this information in the book. There's websites on it. On my links page, people will find some interesting, if they go to Taroscopes and go onto the links page, you'll find whole sections on the giants. I've got information on that in my book. Oh, it's unbelievable. Yeah, the giants is not an outlandish term. By the way, remember I talked about the war of the gods?
Yes.
And that the war was an atomic nuclear war?
Yes.
A lot of scholars, and I'm one of them, I do believe that the giantism factor may have been caused by the radioactive fallout from that war. It may have been at least a contribution.
So you don't think they were giants from the get-go?
I actually do, because that's what the legends say. Whatever the legends say, I kind of am a sucker, I believe it. So, you know, the legends do say that these people were of immense stature, but we must also factor in another dimension, which Lana Cantrell, one of the great American scholars in this field, talks about, that she is a believer in her book that, yes, it was also the radio fallout that created certain colorations of the skin. You know how the gods were always said to be blue in their skin tone, or they might even been pied, multicolored, all sorts of weird anomalies that we find about the gods, that some of them had three eyes, and all the rest of it. This, she said, was caused after the fact by the fallout. So there's a lot of interesting, a lot of interesting tie-ins there.
What about the Greek gods, Michael? What do you think those beings were? Were they also extraterrestrials? Were they the fallen angels, or were they a different group?
I think they are... pictorializations of what we're talking about, because the Greeks didn't invent those gods. Zeus comes from the old Adonai, Jupiter concept from before. So every single one of the gods either came out of Egypt or Sumeria from before. It's all descended by, in fact, many of the scholars have discovered, like Alexander Del Mar has discovered and L.A. Waddell has discovered, that most of the Greek and Roman gods can directly be linked back to the Brahmin gods of India. So they're much more old than that, and absolutely, the Western gods, the Western archetypes are, in my opinion, and remember, what do they all have in common? They're wrathful, they're vengeful, they infight, you know? They have contempt for everyone beneath them. Yep, these are old motifs. No matter where you go, you find it.
Okay, if these fallen angels, if they were around 30 to 50,000 years ago, and they lived 700-800 years, obviously the pyramids, they say, were built let's say 10,000 years ago. That's a number that I feel pretty comfortable with.
Right, me too.
Do you think the descendants of these fallen angels, the Nephilim, helped build the pyramids with some kind of technology?
Yep. Some of these great monolithic sites, I specialized in that for many years, this another one of the beloved subjects. I believe that they can fall into two basic categories. Those monuments that were built before the flood and the pole shift, and those that were built afterwards. Now I believe that certain scientists are catching up with this. They've discovered watermarks on the Sphinx, for instance, and they know that the Sphinx was definitely pre-deluge. It's much older than the pyramid, and the pyramid, because it's more pristine, was after the pole shift and so on. So yeah, and there's no doubt about it that the gods built these. However, one thing, these were not so much tombs as we would understand it in today's world, in the sense that, you know, you bury somebody and then you build something over them. I think they were used for that to a certain extent, but the ancients had a peculiar way of doing things. When one of these, and remember, we're talking about the Lemurians also being gods and also living for a long period of time, so you have two contingents who are very, very powerful beings, one who are pretty dark and evil, and the other group are actually beings of great power and light. Well, when any of these serpent people died, they're, you know, the people who lived on would try to commemorate their entire life in stone. So what we're seeing are not so much tombs, but cenotaphs. There's a difference. A cenotaph is something that is a commemoration in stone of a person's entire life. It's like what, you know, we may compose a symphony for, you know, a departed person, a symphony in music that has been done, like an elegy, a beautiful elegy. Well, that is what the ancients used to do in stone. Now, the places of incarceration where the undead, the Nephilim, were put, they will become places, geomantically speaking, of very, very negative energy. So it's like when you go on holiday or you go traveling, and this is how I discovered this, was that, you know, you go to places where you feel just awful. You know, places like the Lebanon and Israel and the Middle East, which are filled with conflict. Places like Northern Ireland, which are just so drenched in conflict, absolutely drenched in conflict, and other areas in the world. I have tied that in my occult researches to the fact that there is therefore one or more of the graves of these negative beings there that just emits tremendously dark energy. And then there's places where you go where you feel just fantastic, you know, and there's very inspiring energy. Those are places where higher beings of the Lemurian strain fell, and they were interred there. So there's a whole sub-study of this under what's called archaeoastronomy and the positioning of these places on the earth. And now because of the satellites, they're able to pinpoint in Iraq, in Afghanistan, in the Lebanon, in the British Isles, they're able to pinpoint where these underground caverns were, because it's the Masons and the secret societies who've kept, for many, many thousands of years, they've kept the records of where these underground tombs are. But of course, cities grow up over these tombs, you know what I mean? People don't even know what's happening 14 feet beneath the ground. It's the old H.G. Wells, you know, Journey to the Center of the Earth syndrome. We don't even know what's underneath our feet. But now, with the satellites, they can see these secret chambers underneath, and they're going to make use of those satellites to mark the spot and go in there with their teams and try to gradually disinter these beings. And, you know, it's interesting to speculate what would happen there.
David Icke writes about some human beings who have reptilian-looking eyes. I would assume they could be part of the offspring, part of the DNA manipulation.
Yeah, especially the third branch that we were talking about, where they actually did create reptilian beings. But even those reptilian mothers, and you can see this on the cave paintings. I mean, it's J.J. Hertak has done some incredible work on this. You see, like in any child that is born, you can have the ones who are really reptilian. I mean, scales and eyes and tail and the whole works. Well, you don't want those kind of people, you know, those kind of reptilians walking down the main street in the modern age. I do believe those beings were pretty much allowed to walk or roam the earth up until about the Middle Ages. Middle Ages mythologies, the works of J.R.R. Tolkien, for instance, and many of the ancient books that he refers to in his works, definitely these individuals were live and dangerous walking in the world. But as the modern age came in and as city-states became the norm, you had to phase these beings out. And I think that John Rhodes is right when he says that they were interred beneath the earth, and they still exist today, and people see these beings to their great fear. Now, the reptilian who are maybe more humanoid-looking, you could be standing beside one in the street, a fully reptilian being, but because they just happen to be more humanoid, because remember, they're part alien DNA, and the alien fathers are humanoid. So unless you could not tell, well, you can tell. You have to use your intuition. You can use your clairvoyant abilities. Of course, if anybody tells you that they think that, we look at them as if they're, you know, raving lunatics. but we don't believe anymore in this world when people tell us those things, people who are highly intuitive and people who are clairvoyant. You know, I personally come from a whole line of people like that, so it's no news to me. But in today in the world, if somebody, your child or somebody who's got highly developed clairvoyant abilities tells you, oh, mommy, I don't like that person, there's something, you know, cold-blooded about them, or they have evil energy, we force, you know, ourselves to like people, and we don't trust these intuitions. It's terrible.
Is there a possibility that these entities, you know, because ancient mythology also talked, for example, about vampires, could they be part of this?
Check, you're so on the ball, George. Check back to the old Nosferatu story, the old Dracula. Dracula means the dragon, the serpent, the ones who drink the human blood, the human energy. I actually believe, and I'll be talking about this at Conspiracy Con, and it's in the book and the DVD, that these beings who have been interred under the earth have actually been fed. Because they're in a sort of a suspended animated state, it's not a suspended animation, but we've got to use that word so that people will understand what we're talking about here. They have actually been fed for thousands of years, and you know, but they've been fed by what? All the war, the havoc, the death, the ritual crime, the murder, the mayhem, the slaughter, the raping of the jungles, the trees, the flora, the fauna, all the debauchery that their henchmen on the surface of the planet do, and I'm including in that assassinations, serial killings, all sorts of trauma, the crap that comes over the television to put fear into people's lives. All the human being is nothing but a kinetic battery. And we are in a whole matrix, a whole sea of fear.
So they feed on this.
Yes, they feed on it. And there's a specific way to do that. We can't go into that on this program, but there's a specific way in which this works, in which the very emotions that you are leaking from your body enter into the matrix, enter into the earth grid, and are channeled in occult rituals. The design of the cities are involved in this. The design of churches, the design of streets and city plans, the whole design of the earth, where certain bombs are dropped, where certain assassinations are done, the sidereal astrological timing of these things is done with an occult agenda. It would open your eyes to find out about this incredible thing and make sense of some of the terrible crimes that are done to children and why they would be done. And
well,
what the hell is going on?
Hold on, Michael. Hold on. What about, though, the Lemurians, who are the good ones? Aren't any of those people in suspended animation somewhere? Aren't there anybody, good people, protecting them?
I have more information, unfortunately, on the Nephilim. I'm not too sure about the machinations of the Lemurians.
Evil doesn't win this time, or does it?
Of course not. You know, we know that is not going to happen because as I said, there's going to be many changes in the next 10 years. Partly my work is a small contribution to that, to waking people up, to trying to preserve truth. You know, I'm not a priest. I'm not a pope. My job is not to go around saving human beings, but my job, as I see it, is definitely to save truth, so that truth will nourish the world in the future when humanity finally wakes up to find out, you know, exactly what's been going on. As far as the agencies of light, I have my mentors. I believe that those people were descended from, you know, the gods and are tremendous individuals, you know, who have great creative abilities and so on. And of course those individuals exist in the world. But you see, we have to be armored up. The other side has got all the weaponry. The other side have got the edge on us because they know what we don't know. We have fallen asleep. We don't even believe our own ancestors, the people who cared about us the most, who walked near to us, who had our best interests at heart, who created the beautiful, you know, divination arts.